And welcome to Hassan Jaffer's astrology show, It's All in the Stars. Today we have our host, Angelo, and in about 2 weeks' time, probably we'll have Ingrid. Hello, Anne.
Hi, everyone.
And this time we do have the two telephones, and there was some things still going on the internet on our website when you click on It's All in the Stars, and it's being fixed from California in our studios very soon that you'll be able to hear. As you, when you click on the Winamp, be able to get in. So we'll discuss some of the politics and some charts, and very soon we'll be, and we'll also be taking calls. And as we understand, we have somebody waiting already. So Anne, are you ready for the show?
Absolutely.
Okay. So if you have any questions about that astrology, or that, you can always call us at 1-877-876-5227 from anywhere in America, and we'll take your calls or any questions about palmistry, about astrology, etc. So, Anne, have you been, my dear?
Very good. How are you, Hassan?
Thanks. The last two and a half days has been Moon is in the sign of Scorpio. That's
right.
A very sort of violent, vindictive, revengeful. Unfortunately, and here we have this storm going on outside. But it's the last stages of this. The whole mood is shifting now, because June and the month of July, to about late July, were very critical for the 60s age group, and that is all finished now. And all this Nasrallah and Bashar of Syria and Iran's Ahmadinejad, they were all, you know, they all had Mars, I mean Neptune and Scorpio, they're all from the 60s age group. And so a lot of people, a lot of soldiers were also from that age group. Now the other age group, that's the 60s, the 70s age group has been getting from last week till about the first week of August. And also, the Rumsfeld generation, they have been in a very stressful period throughout the month of August, you'll find that. The month of September is very stressful for this Olmert and even Bush, of course, last week of August and the first 2 weeks of September. That's been a very critical aspect for all the 40s and early 50s age group. Are you there?
I'm just waiting for the callers.
Oh, they will be calling in time, yeah. In the meantime, we can keep on discussing. We'll also have a show with Garth Riley, actually, one of the really good friends of mine. One of these days, he has his own television show, actually, the Garth Riley Show. And he wants to get us on the satellite, actually, so we may be able to do that
very
soon. But I'm just waiting for certain things to be developed. We're all our programs working on our website also. In the meantime, by the way, if people want to go to our website, you know the address, yeah?
With astrotrends.net?
That's right, yeah.
Yes, I have a lot of people that were asking me about the site today, as a matter of fact.
So if you go to astrotrends.net, A-S-T-R-O-T-R-E-N-D-S.net, and right at the bottom, you'll find two pull-down menus. The first one says, the personalized, your best timing and luckiest periods. Another one says your dangerous and challenging times. If you click on any one of those articles, it'll tell you at least about all the astrology. I've not updated everything. It's actually a personalized newsletter only by subscription. It's not available to everybody. However, we do have a free newsletter available to everyone for the time being till I get this whole thing set. So supposing you're going through a very lucky time for travel, health, etc., or buying cars, etc. So you just go on that, in that green one, and just click that, and it'll tell you exactly what Mars is, what Jupiter is, and what it means, for example. And then, of course, at the bottom, the personalized, you know, your client number, which we'll be doing later on. And but at least you'll have all the astrological aspects, whether it's good for you or not, etc. Any questions you'd like to ask, Anne? Tell me about astrology, about palmistry.
Relationship.
Hmm.
Okay. I'm not talking about relationships, if anybody wants to call about their relationship.
Okay. But you can also just ask any questions you'd like to ask. Do you have any questions?
Oh, do I?
Yes.
Well, I just want to make a comment that I did buy a black leather purse yesterday.
Did you what? Oh, yeah.
I bought a black leather purse in the middle of the summer, and the people at the store said, "Why do you want a black leather purse? I just want one." I said, "Well, we don't really have a lot this season."
And,
I realized the moon was in Scorpio, so that had something to do with it.
And on in our moon magic, we have written about that, isn't it? The color black,
yeah.
The black leather. So interesting. I bought three glasses, and two of them were completely black, which I've never worn. And it was one in Scorpio.
There you go.
So like, That's why, unfortunately, it's the worst time for any outfit of peace or anything like that. But the next 2-3 days, Moon is going to Sagittarius. This is exactly the time when Princess Diana, she was buried on a funeral, Moon was in Scorpio. And the next 2-3 days, it went to Sagittarius when she passed away, Mother Teresa. So her funeral was totally different. It was like a very philosophical aspect rather than all the shock and all that thing. But you know, Anne, I want to say one thing which is very, very interesting. So you like astrology. You saw all the writings, right? All the newsletters that we did. All those binders and binders of writings that you saw.
Wow.
And all those we'll be putting back on our website, actually. Literally hundreds of articles that you saw. But one thing I want to say that, you know, people ask me that about astrology, how long does this chart last? And my answer is that it's almost as if it belongs to the soul. And I do not believe that there's not a soul that keeps going from one to the other and all that, but that the soul never dies and the body never repeats itself. But once a person is born and their horoscope is made, that continues even after death. And I'll give you an example. This is a very, very interesting thing. And in Princess Diana, when she passed away, Moon was going from the 7th house to the 8th house. And I'll just read you directly from here. In fact, you can see. So it was in the 7th house, and it goes to the 8th house. And as you see, on the 7th house, it says, actually indulge in sharing deep feelings and emotions with your partner and spouse. And it would talk about marriage, and it says about marriage and all that. And it was going into 8th house. It's excellent for getting money and valuables, knowledge. You've got this £200,000 ring. I'm sure she already had got this one, because that is the 8th house theme. But on the other side, it says that often reminded of life and death matters, and the morbid thoughts, etc. So I'm not going to say this house of death or anything, but so she passed away. 2-3 days later, it went to the 9th house. When it's really the 9th house, it talks about churches and philosophy and traveling to the airport and going to foreign lands. And she was flown there to England, to the capital of the country, even though it says that, that's right, and going to the airport, even though she's gone. But exactly this is what was happening.
Can I interrupt you to...
I just want to
explain this to the listeners from another person's point of view, because you're such an expert, and they might be blown away. This might all be above their head. So just to go back to what Hassan is talking about is that everybody's born with a specific chart, and if you look in his book or in other astrological books, you will find how your chart correlates to the planet. To the moon, for instance, which is, you know, one of the luminaries that affects us. The moon affects us every day, and if you were to read this book that Hassan wrote, you would understand how it's affecting you every day. So he's just explaining to us how it affected Princess Diana based on her chart, even after her death. So even though she died, her chart follows her soul based on the chart that she was born with.
Exactly.
And if you were to look in this book and make it specific to yourself or even another celebrity or anybody else, you would see how the moon affects you
on a
daily basis.
About 29, 30-day cycle, so about 2.5 days in each house.
Yeah.
It goes to the 7th house of marriage, then goes to the 8th house. And this is very easy to figure out, by the way. It takes 5 minutes to understand which column applies to you, and that column remains the same all your life. So we went to the 9th house, and she was flown to the airport, and going to the airport, traveling, etc., and then the philosophy, churches, everything was there, St. James Church and all. Then it's 2-3 days later, it's going to the 10th house. And exactly what it was is written here, excellent for limelight, recognition, and social status, including radio and TV appearances. More than a million people watch all around the world. That, if that's not a fame, ask what is. I mean, that's the 10th house. 2-3 days later, it's going to the 11th house. And it shows even people holding hands. And all these aspects of, you know, all... you know, so it's like community and throughout the world holding vigils and all that. And 2.5 years, days later, here it went to the 12th house, when it was like a complete, like an obscurity. It's like it's exactly like graveyards and all that. She actually buried her in this little island, which is away from people, charging her £10 or £5 or something. They made such a huge thing that she wasn't even available to the public. It's very hard to get to her grave. And that becomes like the obscure place. But every day was there. Just like on certain days, you'll find they're talking about Beethoven. They're playing all Beethoven's songs on his piano concerts one day, and you might find that the planets are right on top of his chart that day. So it's really interesting, and that is what makes me aware that, you know, that there is something more than just this life, like a cosmic consciousness out there.
And even like you're talking about our soul after we die, but there's also our soul before we're born. And
what we believe is that after about 3 months or so is when the soul enters the body. Like before that, it's not really the soul aspect. Like what
you mean in the baby?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, so in the beginning,
yeah,
it's like,
I've also read that it takes years, comes and goes.
I'm sorry, on the third month of the, when the fetus is developing.
Right.
Not the third month of birth. On the birth, they already have the soul, you're right, yeah.
No, well,
third month,
I mean, nobody knows. You can only speculate on these things.
But it's interesting, when you see the fetus hand, the first time to develop is a little brain line that comes out. And how it happens, because the lines are not formed. So approximately 3 months is when we believe that the soul actually enters the body.
Yeah, it enters, but I read that it enters and it comes and goes at that stage. Like, it goes in the body, out of the body, and in and out. Like, I read a whole book on this,
but
nobody can prove this.
But the way it is, like, for example, through the moon and all that, we can actually see that how these things work. Another thing which I want to say that all these transits represent are our experiences. We are programmed to have certain experiences, and the psychic experiences. And by the way, if anybody wants to call in, they can actually call in right now at 1-877. We are taking calls now. 1-877-876-5227.
Well, I just wanted to say one more thing about the soul and being in the body before we're born. I was reading an article where they were trying to prove through astrology that the baby wills itself to be born at a certain time. So the baby says, I will be born at this time, whereas
if you
have a cesarean...
But see, I don't really subscribe to that. I understand what you're trying to say.
You're forcing it to come out.
No, I don't think the baby has any free choice in this aspect at all. Even the soul, as you say, I know that. But I believe that there is certain death element. You're right. Like, you see, the thing is, because we are feeding from the placenta before the birth.
Yeah.
And that's where the conception is actually, there's a gonadotropin, which actually triggers the labor pains. But the cesarean part does become, there's a philosophical aspect. You're right. If you're supposed to have Sagittarius rising, and
right.
you have, or if you're supposed to have Taurus rising, it's supposed to be short. And before it becomes Gemini, you'll be tall. The doctor comes in and interrupts this whole scheme to make
right.
it. So because we're all interacting together, there is some element of that for sure. However, I do believe that like there are certain genetic factors. Like you're supposed to have moon in a certain sign, and your mother was born in a certain sign. So how at some point, I'm sure we'll solve this whole puzzle. But the other thing which I want to say, that the experiences, like these experiences that I said for Prasidana, we go through it every 29, 30 days. That's just one cycle, even when you are sleeping. In other words, if you have moon in the ninth house and it says going to for traveling, going to the airport, etc., you will not travel, but you may have a flying dream, and you may completely forget about it when you wake up. So in the night, and you have this real flying dream, or if it's in the 12th house, and you can't run, and all these people are chasing you, and you get caught up, for example, in a hospital or in a jail. You should thank your lucky stars if it's only in a dream, and you're offsetting the theme, because it could happen in real life otherwise. That's why many themes that happen in your dream are exactly opposite to real life, unless they're prophetic dreams. For example, if you feel that you dream that your house is made of gold, the house catches fire. Like all these themes that you talk about, they all relate to the same theme. So
if we can force ourselves, our subconscious, to have dreams, we can offset the bad themes that would have happened to us in reality.
I'm working on this, which I'm calling it the negative theme offset therapy.
But then somebody like me would say, well, why is a dream less important than real life? Because this is the way I equate it.
Or would you like to be caught in a real jail situation or something?
No, because if you have a memory, if you close your eyes and you remember something that happened to you when you were five, you visualize that in your mind.
No,
it's a memory.
It's only the experience. Only the experience that is present.
But how is a memory different from a dream?
No, there is no memory of this aspect. It's actually the experience is there. And each time, now the memory is only persistent of the experience. Like each time you experience sadness, and you recognize the sadness coming every month at a certain time. Mm-hmm.
But do you understand what I'm saying? Let's say you have such a profound dream where you wake up crying or in a sweat or happy or whatnot. That experience is real in your soul.
Absolutely.
And what I'm saying is, where do you draw the line to differentiate that experience from your dream?
So the experience is similar.
From
there's
a
no
memory.
Difference. There's no difference from the experience when you're actually experiencing the aspect.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying, the action. The experience is predictable, not the action. I can say to somebody that, for example, at this time, for example, you'll feel very, very sad for about 1 hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I guarantee that you will. But if you're crying for self or somebody else, for compassion, that's your free choice.
Right.
That is unsafe. Maybe you can ask me again. I'm trying to remember. What do you mean?
I just think about this often because my dreams are so strong.
Yeah.
They're so real.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't know if it happened in real life or if I dreamt it. It could be like a trivial dream. You know, I washed the dishes. Did I wash them or did I do it in my dream? You know. So what I often ponder is, how do you differentiate an experience in your dream from a memory, from something that happened to you in your life a long time ago? In your mind, when you recall, you recall them the same way. Like, if you recall an experience...
Experience of the real thing, you mean you can't differentiate?
No, not if your dream is very strong.
Oh, now I remember.
I mean, you could.
I remember, you might.
But in your mind's eye, when you're remembering it, it's in the same category.
In about a year's time, it'll become normal when that Mercury stops opposing a Mercury. Neptune, I'm going to oppose.
So nobody agrees with me. I want a listener to call in and say if they agree with me or if they understand what I'm trying to say.
You mean you cannot, if I understand correctly, you mean you have an experience that you don't know if he has really?
Sometimes, yes. Yeah, sometimes I can't tell. Yeah, and then I have to really concentrate.
It can't be something tangible then. It must be something like love, for example, which is very intangible, maybe.
Yeah, you can have like really nice experiences in your dreams, or really scary ones or something, and feel the feeling that you would as if you were awake going through that. Like,
well,
the feelings are just as profound.
No, you know, you said a very, very important point, actually, that to the brain, there's absolutely no difference.
Right. That's
an actual experience.
That's
exactly what I'm saying. That Prophet Abraham, if I told him that Prophet Abraham will go through the experience of sacrificing your son,
right,
I would be 100% correct. But if
right.
I said you'll actually sacrifice your son, I'd be 100% wrong.
Right.
There was no difference at that time, while he was blindfolded, when he went through the whole action, there was no difference between sacrificing his son or that goat.
Yep.
But afterwards, of course, surely he knew after that. But if you continue thinking that it was a dream or not, then there's something else.
No, I don't continue thinking it. What I'm saying is that if you were then going to take a memory from your life and just try to relive it in your mind, or relive a dream in your mind, it's the same feeling. They are of the same importance.
You could recall some beautiful experiences to offset the themes. For example, if you have an imminent sadness coming up, you know your chart, for example, at one eye, and you recognize that feeling because it happens every month. The same feeling happens, and then you could recall some instance of something that happened earlier, which brings out this empathy and compassion to offset the theme. For that, you could use. But I'm sure you'll be able to differentiate. You have to give me some tangible
it's
experience.
It's not my question. It doesn't matter. Maybe somebody can call in and tell us about strong dreams.
But that's what all astrology is all about. It's all about experience. We have predestined cycles. Mm-hmm. When we say you have a very lucky aspect for money, we are not seeing money actually coming in. We are seeing the experience that relates to getting money. When people get $1 million, the type of experience that they have, that's, for example, a Jupiter-Venus thing. Or Jupiter-Venus also love. So you find the perfect mate and have a match, for example, you find an extremely lucky aspect. And the type of experience you will have if you met a foreigner who is philosophical, who travels a lot, who is wealthy, will be related to Jupiter-Venus. And that's what all astrology is all about, all the experiences.
What's Mars doing for us nowadays? Because I'm feeling a lot of aggression in the air.
It's in the sign of Virgo, actually, for your age group. It's a very stressful period, actually, from last week for about one more week as the Mars-Neptune says, sort of a real nightmare theme. It reduces the immune system of the body, but it's an obsessive theme. So whatever you do, it becomes an obsession. But of course, how you offset this theme is your free choice. And, we'll just take a short break, just about a few seconds, and we'll be right back.
I don't even want to. Am I on the air now?
And we are back. So we're talking about, now we'll talk about some celebrities. People say, you know, somebody asked me about Nasrullah's chart, you know, the head of Hezbollah. And he has Mercury in the sign of Virgo. Now, Musharraf, the president of Pakistan, he was also born that he was a commando unit person. But this was a very scholarly person. He's getting very good aspects from Jupiter to his Mercury, right to about November, December. Because he's quite a scholar, and also all these, the community things that they do, etc., there's a certain deep faith. These people are what they call Shia, and many people ask me, what is a Shia and a Sunni? And they, and other people are trying to create this, you know, they're trying to create this sectarian violence, unfortunately. But the Shia are the people with the family of Prophet Muhammad, and related to those, what they call Imams, these 12 people who are like apostles, related to them. And there is a certain harmony with them and, of course, Iran. I have a feeling what's going to happen now. One of the things I've said, there's going to be major peace treaties in around the world from November 2008 onwards. But before that happens, there'll be almost injustices in many areas, and three areas, because Pluto represents all these radical changes. But before it can do anything, it takes the things to the, to an extreme excess. In mass education, which is the internet learning, of course, and mass transportation, which we'd also have, and also the legal system, the judicial system, how that whole thing changes. And by 2008, you'll see, because they've really made a mark of the whole thing, all the judges and everything, even this in Guatemala, all these people, these young children almost, they are like 15 years old, 16 years old, they've been jailed there, and I forget, they call them combatants or something, for almost like 2 years, without no court, no law, nothing. So they make a complete mockery of the whole thing. And that's the only hope we do have is by the internet, because the real news you get is not, of course, from the most trusted names of CNN. You get it from all these bloggers who are actually in the war front and all different places around the world. Of course, they'll try their best to suppress that, and they won't be able to. Like right now, we're having a radio show. At some point, we make it available to the masses. I mean, the millions of people can hear these things, right, from around the world, without having to go to this PR or that PR or this producer or anything like that. And in about, I would give it about 2 years' time, and we'd have all this live television right on through the internet and almost in real time, etc. But the third thing was the religion, that all the religious biases, etc., finishing, and harmony between all religions, like a universal justice, etc., and wisdom coming up, the essence of the best of religions, taken from all the different ones, and that moderation coming up. But unfortunately, there had to be some price to pay for it before the public turns. I was quite impressed by all these Jewish mothers who actually were demonstrating in states, actually, that this is not right. I'm not suggesting that Hezbollah is doing right or Hamas is doing right. Nobody's doing right in this aspect at all. But you cannot expect these people. All these rockets did not get fired till the bombs were dropped on them. There's 500-pound bombs being dropped. But you know what? One other thing which is really interesting is that Mars is coming very close to the Earth in its perihelion. I believe by 24th or 26th August or so, it's supposed to be as big as a full moon. I really have to see to believe it, but it's never happened before and never will for long, thousands and thousands of years, apparently. But Mars represents both fire as well as war. It's exactly what's happening. Mm-hmm. The next dangerous time, by the way, will be in November, when there's also the Mars-Neptune thing. There's one last thing, by the way. You know, they talk about this bubonic plague and all that. I don't think just a scare tactic. I think from about late August, September onwards, when Saturn is opposing Neptune, same thing happened, and there were almost like 15 million people killed in the 1900s something, when this bird flu went on through the pigs and all that, got transferred to the people. The same thing is happening back, the low morale, the economy is set to being affected, all that thing, unfortunately.
Where do you think that's going to happen?
It's starting from about late August, September onwards, about 1 year. There's the definite match in security. There's another thing which will lead to peace all around the world. First of all this internet, and I think the monarchy is in danger in the Middle East, because they are the real hypocrites. They're the ones who have invited all these American troops and everything to save them, because without them, the whole country would be gone. And just to save themselves, and they don't see the plight of the individuals, unfortunately.
What do their charts say if you do the charts of the royals?
I've done some of them, you know, and I predicted danger for many of them. And, of course, Fahad passed away exactly when Saturn went to Leo. And I'd written about this aspect, and so did the last emir of Dubai also went. But the Dubai people are not hypocrites. Like, I think they are some of the most modern people. It's amazing what they've done in Dubai. But Saudi Arabia and Qatar and Kuwait, all so many hypocrites, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been to those places and I've seen them, actually. You know. Like women, if you were there, you wouldn't be able to drive even.
Yeah.
And it was interesting that many of these American troops, when they were in Saudi Arabia, these women, the soldiers or anything, they could not drive. they had to conform to the royal aspect of that. Such a hypocrite thing, unfortunately. But
it's interesting to talk about Iran,
you know, that they suppress women and all that. I believe 20% or 25% of the parliament there is women, actually. It's really interesting. Now, as far as the celebrities are concerned, any particular one that you'd like to ask about?
For me or the listeners?
No, for yourself, yeah.
Oh.
I respect your viewpoint a lot, you know that. So we you have Brad Pitt, you have Angelina Jolie.
I know, you keep talking about them. We got to pick somebody new.
You have Shiloh, right?
Who's that?
Shiloh Jolie Pitt.
Oh, they're a little baby.
Yes, that's right. Where they gave out so many millions of dollars for her.
What do you think
Pisces
of her name?
Pisces rising, the last degree of Pisces, and wherever she was, right near the beach.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that's that Pisces aspect. I remember there was a satellite, which was actually falling on the ground. Some time ago, I think about 20 years ago and all that, and all these people, astrologers, psychophysics, and all kinds of things. I went to John Gilbert's show, and I said, I'm 100% positive she'll be near Hawaii in the ocean. And it did happen. It was exactly the same, last degrees of Pisces rising.
Wow. How did you get her birth time?
I think it was actually one of the actresses in Beverly Hills sent it to me, and I think she found it in media. I think it's common knowledge. Like when they have these type of things, they do announce these, actually.
First time?
Yeah. And in fact, there's Suri's even a birth certificate I have, Tom Cruise's little one, actually.
Oh.
So she was Pisces rising and Venus in Aries, and that's like Marilyn Monroe was born with that, of course. Very, very independent girl. Very bright girl, actually. She has Mercury in the sign of Gemini. But she has a wide Mercury-Pluto opposition. Okay,
so yeah. So she's bright because her Mercury is in an air sign, or just because it's Gemini?
Pluto, Mercury-Pluto, unfortunately, has a very erratic mind. She also has Mercury-Uranus square, which is a very real up and down, like a... almost like a bit of a neurotic chart, actually. She'll be a bit colic, actually. She'll definitely have the nervous stomach. She has that Mars in Cancer. But I do want to talk about Mercury-Pluto, One of the actresses, and our so-called actress, for example, in Beverly Hills, and I almost gave up on her now, because I found that many criminals were born with Mercury-Pluto aspect, including the United States Chart Brothers born with Mercury-Pluto opposition.
Who?
Was born, the United States Chart itself has a Mercury-Pluto
opposition. United States.
That's why it'll always remain like that, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
They'll always be loggerheads. They'll be responsible for, countless deaths of thousands and thousands of people around the world. In the name of peace, for example, the first thing...
And then all the anti-war protests.
Yeah, in this
which
war,
are...
Right, the first thing they did was just send... Quickly, the Senate immediately passed this thing to send more bombs there. 500, bombs, starting them on these...
I think their chart is also contradictory in the sense that they wage war. However, half their population is having anti-war rallies. So there's a big contradiction there. Like half the people
see, nobody's against the people. They love the people, even in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
But the government itself that comes in power, the tactics by which they come in power, unfortunately, like last election, I'm sure that Kerry, definitely won that. But this DeWalt company, which actually gave $10 million in fine to the California state because they had defrauded the tax. There was no ballot asset you could actually... At one flick of a switch, it could go completely opposite. And they actually proved this, all the fraud. And there's no aspect of that. But that aspect I'm talking about in the United States chart itself is a Mercury-Pluto opposition. Right from atom bombs to thousands of people being killed everywhere.
What if it wasn't an opposition with a square? Would it be just as bad? Or
square, conjunction, opposition, all have that demonic aspect, unfortunately.
So any aspects between Mercury and Pluto?
Yeah, I've seen some of the criminals, actually, some of the worst criminals that I looked at. Looking at Gemini, especially. I mean, it can be in any sign, but Mercury in Gemini, for example, Jean-Paul Sartre was born in existentialism. He was born in Mercury-Pluto opposite square.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very bright, brilliant fellow. But first of all, these people are extremely blasphemous, almost. Absolutely, like no soul, no realization of truth. They're very intelligent, very intellectual, but no realization of truth. That part is completely missing. And I've come across so many people, and unfortunately, these are the people who are driving these warmongers right on top. They're very conceptual. That's how they can rule the populace. And there's no passion, there's no emotions, no response to tears, anything at all. Like, what have we learned from all this protocols and all this, now to Germany, what they were doing, for example, turn around and do exactly the same thing again?
How could they offset their theme when they have something like that if they realize it?
It's a very hard thing because, like, I'm born with the Mercury-Pluto trine. That's a positive aspect. The way to understand the certain aspect of divine truth. I'm also born with the Moon-Pluto trine, which is subconscious concept truth. But people like myself do not really have a need to prove anything to anybody. That's the problem. People who are born with the negative aspect, they have, this chip on the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
So they always have this bitter aspect. Like this actress, for example, her mother passed away in her arms, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been there for 25 years, doesn't have a green card. And then when she went to the immigration thing, there was a Russian woman who could hardly speak English. and she asked her to spell cat. Mm-hmm. And you can see this. Here's a baroness from Germany who's been there 25 years, Canadian citizen, still doesn't have a green card and all that.
Yeah.
But people write their own destiny. I really believe that, you know. Like every aspect. For example, she tells off Spielberg, mm-hmm. and, you know, for you don't do those type of things. If you're a budding actress, for example, you want to have a show, so people set themselves up for it. But one of the things I really want in the long run is have a massive database, and if somebody, or for all the presidents and all these people who are elected, people in power, that you do not have people who have met Putin in a negative way, or Moon Putin in a negative way. Whether you take Bush, you take anybody, all have this aspect. Like the first Bush, for example, you know, you can be so nice to people and 1.2 million tons of bombs in Iraq. But 50% of the population is less than the age of 15.
So what way can we approach these people that have that negative aspect between Pluto and Mercury to get
transformation? See, I lost my mother when I was born. But because I have a trine, mm-hmm. I have this intrinsic awareness that if God had to deny me something so precious, mother's love, I must have something very special. So I went to, like, you know, when you want to evolve voluntarily,
mm-hmm.
rather than resisting, there's absolutely no way you can win by resisting this aspect when it's a negative thing. But that's exactly what it shows, that these people never want to learn. And their thoughts, if you were to enter the thought, they would be some of the most demonic thoughts. It's like some young kid, for example, saying, let's bomb Russia, for example, without having any feelings with all the children and the mothers. And
so you think that there's no way to offset this scene for these people? No way to get through
them? Yes, absolutely. They should have some beautiful... for example, everybody, you know, when they have some fantastic games on the piano, like instead of shooting ducks and all this type of things, they have these, C and D flat going off with them, you're shooting them, for example. It's a totally different theme.
Mm-hmm.
Like all the, you know, some of the most violent games that are coming up, when they become so used to it. But this is all, it started coming up when Pluto was in Scorpio, the most violent time. Now it's on Sagittarius. I put the whole thing right on the shoulders of the religious authorities. Of every religion. I think it's their responsibility, rather than inciting the people to actually, help them to understand each other, to respect them, etc. But unfortunately, they almost have lost power because most priests, rabbis, etc. are getting together.
Mm-hmm.
However, the politicians who are right at the top, they're not even listening to them anymore. So that's what's supposed to be. But
so people are looking for new religions.
But let's hope.
If you think of it, like they're becoming spiritual. People are looking for outside of the traditional religions and more spirituality and other types of ways to enlighten themselves.
Yeah, you know this Mercury Pluto that we talk about. There was a Schofield, this fellow, in 1909 or something. He published this Bible, this Schofield's reference to something.
Mm-hmm.
He also was backed up by some of these people who were who are ruling some of these world aspects, for example, and they became very popular, and they completely changed the whole Bible reference completely. What was what the land means and all that, and that's when it's being practiced these days. And looking at this, it's amazing how they've completely changed this whole thing, and by really getting to the minds of people, and that's what I'm saying. There'll be a complete revaluation. Actually, there's another thing. The Bible will be either they find the Dead Sea Scrolls, for example, these type of things. That might also happen by November 2008.
Hmm.
Yeah. But the beautiful aspects, some of the most beautiful aspects are, for example, for musicians and artists.
Yeah.
When you find Venus Neptune, actually, we should talk a bit about love, you know, rather than all these themes. As that, the secret, you know, that one says, instead of anti-war, be pro-peace.
Yes.
You know, even as we are talking with that moon in Scorpio, we hear all these sirens in the background, unfortunately. You know?
and the lightning in the background.
You know, I can never understand why do they have to have it such a high decibel that beyond the threshold of pain also they're going like that crazy. And then they glorify
the panic.
Yeah, but the thing is, if they had even one-third that noise, it'll still be very, very high-pitched. I'm sure people still get out of the way and all that, let them go on that rather than having... I was giving to people.
It's a good point. I'm all for that.
you're not right, you said, right?
I'm all for that because I live downtown. So.
Did you to me make it less to me? Yeah?
Yes, I think it would be just as effective.
Absolutely, yeah. So the different types of love, you know, I wrote an article about 15 years ago on all the different types of love.
Mm-hmm.
And being in astrology, it's so much easier for us to understand it. For example, if your Venus, as you know, is love, then you add Pluto to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Venus in Scorpio, or Pluto, any aspects, especially if it's a negative aspect, it becomes almost like that demonic type of love, that obsessive love, that you want to become very controlling, you want to possess that person, mind, body, and soul. They're always in front of your eyes. And if it's a positive aspect, it is not the fanatic theme. But it's a very deep ability to want to, you know, to find truth, true love. But a Venus Pluto always gives an attraction to Scorpios, like the Shaviran's wife, Farah Pahlavi. The queen was born with Venus in Sagittarius, trying to Pluto. So she married somebody who was philosophical. We got something to say about him, but he was also Scorpio. And the Venus-Neptune aspect is probably the most romantic, the most deceptive type of love, because romance thrives on deception, you know. If the positive aspect becomes like a beautiful, you know, a Romeo and Juliet type of love. And do you have any questions, Ange?
I have a question. You're talking about one person's chart. So the way they, if they feel love is romantic, et cetera, but how does a second person, who is the second part of that equation, induce love in
Why is it not mutual, you mean, yeah?
I mean, like you're saying, a person can have notions of romantic love because of the way their planets are aligned, and then let's say another person comes along that they're going to fall in love with, and that person has their planets completely differently. How does that combination affect the first type?
Well, if they're both falling in love, then they both must have similar aspects. But one may be getting a Pluto aspect, want to possess the person, but the other one is getting the Neptune aspect. The one that's ethereal type of love, where you look at the world through those kind of glasses. But they both have the same aspects. It's fantastic, of course.
But what's more important? Is combining their two charts going to have a bigger influence on their love? Or
influence? The separate one, definitely. Because I don't believe the concept works at all. I've seen many of these charts, which are absolute nonsense. Well, what they do is, for example, somebody has Venus in Scorpio, and somebody has Venus in Capricorn, and you make it into Venus in Sagittarius. Neither one of them is lighthearted like a Sagittarius. So it doesn't make sense at all. You take Scorpio, Capricorn, and make it into Sagittarius, taking a medium in between.
That's terrible.
Yeah, that's
mixing.
90% of the sites are like that. Like the compatibility that we have, we compare people's charts, and we give a full report on that.
What I was asking is, let's say you take person A and make them fall in love with, and they fall in love with person B. If person A falls in love with person C, okay, and there's two different relationships there. What's more important that's going to dominate that relationship? The combination of A and B? Combination of A and C? Or just the person A by themselves?
Is your friend listening to this?
All my friends are listening today, but you see what I'm saying? Like, is your way of loving going to be more important than the combination of two people? Like, what dominates?
I'm still trying to understand the question. Like, for example, listen from your own point of view. Yeah. And you love somebody, and...
And then you love somebody else. Are you going to love them the same way? No, you're not. Usually
loving
it's different.
People.
Yeah, and then you love another person in another relationship. It's always different. Isn't that because of the combination of charts?
Yeah, but in your case, for example, you're a Leo, but you have Venus in Cancer. So you're not the type who loves many people at all, anyway, because you're very deeply emotionally committed once you get involved in a relationship. So you might just like somebody, but that deep love aspect, that would be very different. Because it's not just by the signs, but also by the planetary positions. If you're getting a sign aspect to your Venus, and you feel very insecure, then you meet another person, you really have to see what transits are going on with that person, how that person's chart is interacting with yours, first of all. I think that's what you're asking. Is the transit that is important, or that person's chart, how it interacts with you?
Exactly.
I see. That's a very, very interesting question, actually. Yeah.
Because are we different with a different person, or are we still the same person?
Does that person's chart somehow
invade ours and our aura and make it all a different thing because it's together?
No, you are absolutely right.
Our
intensity changes.
You know what I mean?
We don't become completely a different person, but it is true that we become more artistic at one time, more romantic at one time.
Depending on who we're with, with your
feelings at a certain time, and Saturn is touching it off. That's true. Like when Saturn sets off your Venus, you want to make the relationship more of a long-term commitment, but also very productive. Whereas Jupiter, you don't have a sense of commitment, but you want to enjoy life, and your attitude warrants that as well. But you definitely would not change, but it will modify that behavior. But the intrinsic, when you actually meet somebody, how their charts compare with each other, that is far more important. That part doesn't change. But you might be both going through some very difficult aspects. So there'll be a testing period, but there'll always be that underlying passion.
Well, I want to ask you something else now. This is more, this is a weird question. How is it, I'm sitting with you right now, I have my chart, and it's influencing me because, you know, I was born with it, and you have yours. We're sitting side by side.
Yes.
How are those two charts physically, how is my energy physically mixing with yours to make us have a compatibility or not? What is going on there? What kind of energy that we're not seeing makes two people have a good relationship based on astrology or a bad one because of astrology?
Okay. You see, you have Mercury in Leo.
Yes.
I have Mercury in Sagittarius.
Right.
My Venus, your Venus also trine each other. Our Mercury is trine each other. So there's a certain empathetic bond. There's a certain awareness. And the thing is, for example, you have Mercury in Leo. When I use that part of the brain,
right,
which represents the Leo portion of our brain,
right,
it really gives me a high. So every
right.
time I talk to you, it leads me to that divine truth also because it's part of my ninth house.
But what is it physically for me, for my being right here, my energy?
Oh, it must be something electromagnetic.
What is it? Is it
like
an aura thing? What is it?
Yeah, it has to be like, something electromagnetic or something. But the way we ask questions and all that, it's a...
Electromagnetic.
There's a mutual response. Like when I... like every time you meet me, it'll stimulate the Sagittarius part of your brain, which has a philosophical aspect, and you'll always think about astrology. Suddenly you'll get excited about astrology every time you think about me even. Not even if you're close to me or not. Because you represent, you remember that Mercury in Sagittarius, and I represent that energy and the type of questions that I ask.
Does it leave a footprint in your mind when you
it's similar,
like an
it's
energy?
It's different parts of the brain. Absolutely, we are all interacting with each other constantly. There's some after electromagnetic force, I'm sure, how we represent it. Because you see, when you were born, the whole geomagnetism will never repeat itself,
exactly.
And you represent that.
How does that moment when you are born, like a computer, like how does that imprint you?
That's exactly what I'm saying. There must be something electromagnetic or something. You represent that moment. But all these times...
You then vibrate at a frequency,
I'm not sure if it's vibration or what it is. Because, see, the Earth doesn't have its own magnetism.
Mm-hmm.
The geomagnetism doesn't have any. Just like all the planets. The Sun induces the magnetic field in the Earth.
Right.
And as the other planets are coming in, it constantly changes. The whole geomagnetism has been changing every minute relative to the planets. That has been proven. So it wouldn't change, require much energy for the chromosome crossovers during the time of fertilization.
Right.
So it's all like a big puzzle. For example, they all interact with each other, and it can only happen at certain times. All that part is there. The only free choice here, the only free choice is how we act out our experience, as I said. And that's where the culture comes in, that's where the training comes in, etc. Like I've never taken a drop of alcohol in my life. Nobody told me, but my father never tried. I just saw his example, for example, just by example, I learned. And yet, my chart is like the worst drug addict you've ever seen.
Well, your life's not over.
So I'm obsessive, but the form of obsession is my free choice. Everything I do is an obsession. There's a fellow here today, you know, and he also is a black belt in Taekwondo and all kinds of things. I was telling him he has a very, very obsessive aspect about him. And he has Scorpio rising. And I was telling him that he has to be very, very careful of these strongs of these women. And he has Venus and Virgo, total romantic relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was telling me that, oh yes, I really can't get rid of all that at all, completely. I said, don't underestimate this as at all, because somebody comes up with all these leather pants, all that type of thing, we suddenly gone again. So don't underestimate this aspect. It's not like an enemy or anything like that. And 2 minutes later, I was telling him, you know, there's one of the team members, she's a battalion commander, but she's a supermodel also. And she looks so gorgeous. She said, I love to meet her. And the way he said it, was amazing. Mm-hmm. I said, you haven't forgotten what you said 5 minutes ago, you had complete control of this whole thing. But it's interesting now, he's very much into self-mastery. And he thinks, of course, that the whole body wants to do that, the mind will take care of itself, of course, with that Scorpio rising.
Yeah.
So I told him, I said, the first thing you need to do is to get reconciled with your father. He hadn't said anything about the father at all, completely.
And how did you know there was a problem with the father?
There are many things in his chart.
I have to know the technical details.
But the Scorpio theme, and because, see, he's got Leo on top of the chart, because Scorpio aspects indicates the power struggles, the power authority. His whole thing was very confrontational, almost no.
And the Scorpio was what, his ascending? What was it?
That's right, rising sign, which
rising
actually
sign?
Made him go into research and dig up information so much that people, celebrities, will seek his advice. Right on top, he's got Leo. Now, I have Sagittarius rising,
right,
but also put Scorpio as part of the 12th house, which is research and dig up information. That is so much that Leo is part of the 9th house. And, of course, so there's nothing in life which gives you more high than a little bit of divine truth. That's that Leo part in the 9th house. And that is what your Mercury stimulates. Every time you ask these questions, which are different from normal people, it stimulates that side and leads me to the truth without even knowing what the answer was, maybe.
What about Aries? Because that's another fire sign.
Aries
also,
it turns out my fifth house, my hobby, things which I really enjoy. There's suddenly arts, you know, a totally blunt passion, for example, something which I really enjoy.
So anybody looking at their chart right now could look at their ninth house and find what sign is there.
Like, for example, in your
case, let's say it's in Cancer. That means somebody that is a Cancer has Mercury in Cancer?
In the ninth house.
Yeah, okay, so let's say me. I have Pisces and Aries in my ninth house. So who will stimulate my need for higher knowledge?
Every time you are near the ocean, you'll have beautiful spiritual experiences. So the most spiritual experiences on your life will always be near the ocean, near the water.
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah, that's a Piscean theme right there.
Oh, okay.
That's right. And so, this is a deep realization of truth.
Excellent. Okay, but that's the sea. What about a person? Where would they have to have Pisces in order to stimulate my search for truth?
It's not just the Pisces part. It's just anybody who has a deep empathy, compassion. They say some beautiful words. They have a soothing voice.
Mm-hmm.
They're fantastic in music, for example. They bring tears to your eyes. Or all these little acts of kindness. Anybody who has that's a Piscean theme. They don't necessarily
They'd have some dominant Pisces in their chart.
Or Neptune aspects in their chart.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not a Pisces, but I have a Moon Neptune aspect in my chart.
Mm-hmm.
That. So in feng shui, it's excellent for the environmental beautification.
Right.
That's I'm an artist, for example. And that is not just artists. And most of my paintings, if you notice, they all have water in them.
Yes.
And ocean, for example, right there.
Yes.
Like in that Venice one. In most of my books, have all of them water elements.
Yes.
That's a Neptune theme. Yet I'm not a Pisces.
You said to me with my chart, people are going to get bored with my chart, that I should look out for Geminis and Cancers as secret hidden enemies.
Yes,
what house was that in?
So your 12th house is always like your obsession,
mm-hmm.
but also people who undermine your interest. Like, you might have a Gemini person and whose wife hates you, for example. You got involved with somebody who was already married, he didn't tell you, for example, you got involved, the person was Gemini. And the person really loved you also.
Mm-hmm.
But because of it, for example, you made all kinds of enemies.
But would that be just sun sign people that are
sun sign or the Venus position also, but especially there's a certain energy. When you look at the chart, you can actually feel what that the energy of that person is. And you'll find that a lot. So Gemini and Cancer, that's part of your 12th house.
So does everybody have that? Everybody must have that in their chart.
Something in the 12th house, that's right. That's
so they can keep an eye out for that type of thing.
Yeah. Like, for example, physically, you've got to be very careful of lungs.
Mm-hmm.
And or smoking around you because of the Gemini theme and the Cancer in the case of stomach area. But you always have to be very careful of that. Like, by the way, my moon is in Aries and that falls into your 10th house.
And it's opposite to my moon.
But what's the 10th house, do you know?
Well, fame.
That's right.
Fame.
And here you've been, the second show you're doing, and it's going to be archived. People all around the world can hear it.
Uh-huh.
So it always stimulates this aspect.
Huh?
But somehow I recognize that thing in your chart.
Right.
That your type of knowledge question that you ask, they really should be available to the masses because it's a very nice interaction.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a confrontational one. It may appear sometimes to people it's not. Because I love somebody to ask questions which are very difficult sometimes to answer also.
Yes, and to keep asking until you actually answer.
because I have to understand the questions first. You know, sometimes it is a bit difficult.
It's because sometimes it's not just to understand that your mind or everybody's mind is in a track.
Yeah.
And until somebody takes it off that track, you still want to stay in the track. So even though they're asking you the question with words, you don't want to hear the real question. You want to talk about something else.
But these are very intangible things, though, you know. They're not very easy to understand. Yeah.
Well, that's what makes it so much more intriguing.
Yeah. But remember, but the thing which I really want to give out this energy for everybody also, because we really, really, my ultimate aim is with yourself and Ingrid and all people, is to find the answers to how astrology works. Now, I find that whether you call it called gradients, the Leo part is the part that gets you high.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has that in some area, but you'll give up your sleep, your food, for example, and where it's exactly opposite to having low self-esteem. Gives a high. Every time you see a heroic performance, you see Cirque du Soleil, you go into a limo, you wear your best dresses, for example, and somebody praises you, that appreciation, that ego gratification on Leo. Now, wherever it is, you will have that same element. It's exactly opposite to depression. And everyone has that in some area that they can be proud of, that they've done something. And that's the Leo part. You buy the first house. For example, Leo is in the fourth house. fourth house is your home. Mm-hmm. Leo, you might be living on King Street or have a castle or palace place.
Mm-hmm.
It's all Leo themed. As no. Now, the thing is, the first house that you buy, it might be just a normal one for security, but the second one that you buy when you can afford big, it's almost like a palace, that has to be where the lamps are, Versace lamps, for example,
mm-hmm.
and obviously it has to do something with the ego that you really enjoy this. You'll be known for the way you've decorated the place and everything. That's a Leo. I'm really interested in finding out what part of the brain that is. Because in my case, that has to be the divine truth. Because there is nothing in life that gets me such a high as that divine truth. Because my Leo star is the ninth house. Now, what's interesting is it's related to wherever there's Scorpio in your chart, exactly three houses down. Now, Scorpio is part of my 12th house, which is where you want to find the mysteries of life, the passion for secrets. My original teacher used to say, Venus being in the 12th house is love of secrets. I mean, the secret love affairs. Then one day I challenged him. I said, why don't you say love of secrets instead of secret love affairs?
Yeah.
That is much more to me than secret love or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that aspect becomes so strong that you do incredible research. Like you went to my office, you saw all those binders, all the research that you saw.
The library. Yeah.
So much of the research aspect, that is what makes a celebrity seek you out. It's not because of celebrity that I did this research. So this 9 degrees, that everybody is born with this. So wherever there's this Scorpio theme in your chart, a few houses before that would be this Leo theme. So your Leo is part of the first house and second house. How you make your money, you'll be having all these $50 bills and $100 bills at some point. That's a Leo theme. Or you're dealing with exclusive people, for example, and also part of your personality.
Yeah.
That's a Leo theme.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very strange when clients just come to me and they used to give all these brand new $50 and $100 bills, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking that they must be getting some kick out of it, you know. That's a Leo part of the second house. There's a certain class
mm-hmm.
with that, but it's also part of your first house that it gives a certain courage, that it can actually be on television, for example, rather than just radio.
Yeah.
But it's also related to that Scorpio being part of your fifth house, fourth and fifth house.
Right, which we were saying, if whatever sign is in your fourth or fifth house has something to do with your...
Well, all your hobbies,
that you're gonna
and Scorpio,
have.
The mysteries of life also, but your love affairs.
Mm-hmm.
Very difficult, almost impossible type of relationship. As you get involved with that, which makes you enhance your personality so that person will come
mm-hmm.
to you
mm-hmm.
also. Or maybe you go through this fundamental change in your whole personality. And I mean, but I'd like to find the answer for each one of them, or to write them. Whether it's Scorpio, it's
mm-hmm.
not just a Scorpio in the 12th house, but how it relates with all the rest of the signs all around the chart. Because that position is fixed.
Yeah.
For example,
Scorpio
is
such an intense sign.
You have Cancer and Leo as part of the first house.
Yes.
So your seventh house is Capricorn and Aquarius.
That's
exactly like Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt. Exactly.
He
has Venus in Capricorn.
Yes.
So you have this Cancer side, so you seek these father figures or people. You don't want people to really just go along with whatever you're saying, for example. You really want people to actually stand on their ground, for example, be like a rock, be against them, and they're still there, but be a bit like a father figure also, so older men you're drawn to. But you also have that Aquarius there in the seventh house.
Let's say I had Gemini there. What would that mean?
Totally, totally different.
Like, what would I be looking for?
The person is very talkative type and all that. But
mm-hmm.
the thing is, you're having
maybe
a
more useful.
No, you see, Aquarius is almost like you got along with somebody who's almost like anti-monarchy, but
mm-hmm.
you represent the monarchy. You have Leo in the first house,
oh,
but that
nice.
You need appreciation, you need attention. But the person is as if he's least impressed, can be
mm-hmm.
coolly sarcastic. And
you know, Aquarians are smart. They want to pretend they're not, but they are.
I think either we have a caller here. Maybe you can.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, hi.
Hi, Ingrid and Hassan.
Hi, how are you? This is actually Anne Toulou here and Hassan. How are you?
Yes, Ingrid.
Hello, is this the same caller that's been on the line the whole time?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That's why you never got any calls today.
Oh, I see.
Because I beat you and...
So we'll just finish your chat and then because we're almost...
We need another hour.
Yeah, well, we don't have time now. We got to wrap up in about 10 seconds.
Oh,
so I'll let you do that.
Okay, well, what's your date of birth?
April 6, 1979.
Okay, I'll give you one thing, by the way. Later on, because we're running out of time, we have to wrap up here. My number is 416-497-9000. And if you call me, I'll call you right back, right after the show.
So oh, it's okay. I'm in Toronto, actually.
I'm sorry?
I'm in Toronto.
That's easy, then. 416-497-9000. You do have an extremely spiritual chart, by the way. That's why you have such a nice, soothing voice. Reminds me of Celine Dion, actually. Extremely romantic.
Oh, thank you.
Also being drawn to older people, but the fear of rejection. But we'll talk about all that when you call me after. And thank you very much. And we had a nice discussion. I really enjoyed these. I wish I had known that the caller was on the line.
Sure. I know. Thank you.
Welcome to go to my website also. It's astrotrends.net, astrotrends.net. And our email is stargaze, stargaze, at astrotrends.net, astrotrends.net. And our number is 416-497-9000. And,
okay, great. Maybe I just call you right after the show. Is that all right?
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
In about 5 minutes' time, you can call.
Well, that's great. Thank you
so much. Thank you very much, and thanks a lot, Anne.
Thank you. I had a great time.
And we hope next Wednesday everybody can catch our show again.